Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Going to be talking today about weather and spring and summer forecasting with Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys. They're with us the last Monday pretty much of every month. But with me every day of the week, Judith Sears-Poisson joins us, and we're asking you to think right now about how much you rely on WPR's Ideas Network for enlightening, for informative discussions. And we're here right now to remind you that WPR relies on you to keep programs like this one on the air. We're in our spring membership drive, and a gift, any amount, makes a big difference in our ability to pay for the programs that you count on. So I hope you'll give a gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. It's a good idea, don't you think, Judith?
I think it's a great idea. And, you know, when you said here with you each and every day, I have to say it's the highlight of my day, being able to spend the time with you, Larry. I always learn something new, as I know so many of our listeners do. You know, last hour, the goal was 40 pledges, and we heard from 27 listeners. Thank you so much for those pledges. Now we have another goal, and we need you to help us meet that by the end of the program. Our goal is 65. And so we really need you to get to the phones. These goals are really important. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussion going strong on Wisconsin Public Radio. Take a moment right now. Be one of those 65 that we're looking for. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We heard from one donor who said, let me see if I can quote this now, "Every day WPR brightens my mind, raises my spirit, and piques my curiosity," which is very cool. Another said, "WPR is the best deal ever."
I couldn't agree more. Thanks for those comments. We couldn't have said it any better ourselves. Because you have these same thoughts running through your head, support WPR right now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have something very special going on this drive. Pledge any amount and you'll be entered into a drawing. It's a trip for two on a garden tour of London and the surrounding area with me.
With you.
Yeah, actually, it's going to be a lot. I saw somebody yesterday who said, you know, we weren't going to contribute. You know, they're giving me the business about it. But we would like to win that trip, so we are going to contribute.
And so they know you, so they know how much fun it would be to be on that trip with you.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. So you can find out the details. Make your pledge at WPR.org. or at 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, Larry will be talking with the weather guys. I know, answering the phones, answering emails, people love the weather guys. Steve and John are two of the favorite guests that we have on. So we know that you enjoy them, and discussions like this are possible because of your financial support. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving is really easy, either at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Just need your name, some contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay it.
And you can save time and money. Use a credit card if you can. Or better yet, sign up for automatic sustaining donations from your bank account. You choose how to give, and then you do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you'll be enjoying a WPR Pledge Free after 1 o'clock this afternoon. But to make Pledge Free afternoon possible, we need to pull together during these morning hours. Your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 really helps keep this pledge drive efficient. So thank you in advance.
And we really do try to minimize it, you know, not interrupt the programming more than we have to. But we really do need your support. And we still need 62 more pledges in the next, 80 minutes or so. So help us out now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you give $120 or more, you can request food for 40 as your thank you gift, providing meals to those who are in need in your specific area of the state. Last year, WPR listeners gave more than 71,000 meals. That's absolutely amazing and wonderful. So let's try to do that again.
I love that idea. For your pledge of any amount, too, remember, you'll be entered in a drawing for a trip for two on the garden tour of London and Southeast England and with Larry. That's a priceless gift, I have to tell you. Get the details and enter now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Was it Marsha or Patricia in Madison says, I love WPR. You are my lifeblood. Thanks very much.
Wow.
Well, thank you very much. And if you're one of those people who loves WPR, likes what we do, I hope you'll donate right now at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
Show your love for Larry and the weather guys. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And thank you.
And Judith will be back and we'll talk with
her.
Yes, we will talk with her a little bit later on. But let's talk with Steve Ackerman right now, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, also a professor of Atmospheric Oceanic Sciences. Steve, welcome back.
It's great to be back, Larry.
John will be joining us at noon.
Yeah, after he gets right out of his class. He runs over here.
He has to teach his class, and I think, and that's fine.
That shows where his priorities are. You know,
and,
he's a great researcher. He's a great teacher.
Absolutely. And obviously he needs to teach, and so he's doing that.
I guess he likes his classes better than us.
Well, I tell you what, you and I can talk. Well, you can talk. I'll sort of listen in. I can ask some questions. But our listeners, you may have a question or comment here as we talk weather with Steve Ackerman. For now, John Martin will be joining us just a little bit later. Call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org. And if you've got a photo or a question, you can also love those photos. We've had some great weather photos at my Facebook page. You can send those to the Larry Mueller Show and post it there, and we'll talk about them a little bit. You know, we've had, in just a few months of 2012, there have been some really extreme weather instances.
Yeah.
I was looking at Judith had come up with, found an article that talked about the fact there was like 11 feet of snow fallen in Anchorage, Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a record. The city's had to haul away 250,000 tons of snow.
250,000 tons. Jeez.
And yet, not so much snow has dropped on the lower 48 this year.
Yeah, and it's been kind of the weather patterns that that kind of set up that caused that big dumping in Alaska. Europe was cold over the wintertime. You know, the canals in Venice froze at one point. In Amsterdam, the canals there also froze. You know, of course, for us, we were most of Wisconsin for the wintertime, and that's just December, January, February was 5 or so degrees above normal. And we're not even talking about March yet, which has been really crazy.
And Michigan had 6 tornadoes in March.
Yeah, yep, 6 tornadoes in March.
They set 26 heat records.
Yeah, the number of heat records that have been broken in March is phenomenal. I mean, there are so many, I can't even count them. And not just in the upper Midwest. In Canada as well, and also in Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, maximum temperatures were broken. I mean, we had minimum temperatures that were greater than our normal daytime maximums.
Isn't that amazing?
It's just mind-blowing in terms of the type of weather and the type of heat wave and how long it lasted. I mean, I came out, you know, walking over here this morning. I came out of my office and walking over there, and I'm thinking, oh, geez, it's cold. And they're like, well, no, it's normal.
It's normal,
it's just
been
so warm around. It's been crazy.
Phil in Hebron, Illinois has, I think, something that relates to this. Hi, Phil. Thanks for calling.
Hey, you guys. I grow perennials for a living, so I keep real accurate records of how they grow and things. With the wonderful world of digital cameras, I know exactly when everything flowers. And compared to a normal year here, we're just late below Lake Geneva, we're exactly 23 days ahead in flowering.
23 days. Gee, that's almost a month.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like this in 45 years of doing this. Exactly 23 days ahead.
Yeah.
And I mean, we kind of like it in some ways, but you look at orchardists, for example. They are really worried because...
Yeah, and then kind of freeze.
Everything's budding now. As you say, Phil, they're like a month ahead.
Yeah, I wouldn't put my money on that we're frost-free till June. I wouldn't want to be an orchardist.
Yeah.
The probability of getting a frost in April is not out of this world. I mean, it's got a good probability. So it's not a good situation in terms of things flowering. And for me, it was maple syruping. Maple syruping lasted maybe a day or two.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It's just terrible.
I was really sorry. Maple syrup quantities are going to be down. Prices are going to be quite a bit higher.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure of that. So that's all. Can we explain anything related to all this huge?
We know why we had such warm weather, and that is because of a certain pattern set up in the atmosphere. We call it an omega pattern because it looks like the Greek letter omega, so we're not too creative that way. But the way that it set up for, a couple of weeks was just taking air from the south and moving it northward into our area. And generally, as we know, this time of the year, or most of the time, air to the south is warmer. And then the skies were clear for most of this time. And so as it's going over land and heading northward, the solar energy tends to heat it up and warm it up. And so we had days where it was colder in Dallas than it was up here. And that's, just part of that. You just have to shake your head and just say, no, this is just odd.
And it's not necessarily something that's going to happen every year from now on.
I hope not. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that people are going to be really looking at for the next year is, why did this pattern set up and why did it stay around for so long?
It's Bill in Menominee, turning to you next. Hi, Bill.
Oh, wow. Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had two questions about the weather. I really follow the weather more as I get older. And I noticed that the shapes that these storms are taking, in the continental, they look like continental hurricanes. Have they always, like this most recent one, just, it's stretched, this big swirl or spiral stretch from Texas to Wisconsin, and it was one big giant storm that looked like a typhoon or a hurricane. I was wondering if that was something that's always happened. And then, really, I guess that's... I had another question, but I would just be curious to hear about that.
Okay.
Yeah, that was kind of the storm that occurred recently. So it brought us some precipitation and relief from the heat wave that we were getting. That's a classic mid-latitude, what we call mid-latitude cyclone, in the sense that it's not a hurricane, so it's generally associated with frontal systems and jet streams up aloft, and it's a mechanism of moving energy from the mid-tropical regions of Earth up into the polar regions of Earth. Although, as you were pointing out, I think the zonal extent of that from north-south in terms of a line of precipitation, when I went to look at that, was pretty extensive, going from Texas all the way up into the Midwest. So that does happen, but, it doesn't happen all the time.
All the time,
by any means.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the call. Talking weather today with Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Weather on our minds this morning, the guest, Steve Ackerman. Steve's been with us. He comes by the last Monday of every month along with John Martin, and John will be joining us a little bit later on, about noon today. But for now, Steve is answering your questions, and Pete in La Crosse has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Pete. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Hi, Larry and Steve. In recent weeks here at La Crosse, we had a spell of 9 days that saw 7 of those days beating previous record highs.
Yeah.
Pretty outstanding. But, hey, nobody talked about how those days fared in terms of warm overnight lows. And I got to think a bunch of those were new records as well. Do you have that information, or where would I get that?
Yes. I'm going to give you my email because it would be easier to send you a link that talks about all the records that the National Weather Service put together that were broken in this March period, than to try and read them off. But I know that there were minimum high temperatures that were broke. And so what minimum high temperature is that at nighttime, what's the highest minimum temperature you ever got? And we were getting minimum temperatures in the upper 50s in March, which is just
Yeah, unbelievable.
Just unbelievable.
Well, we had overnight lows here of 63 degrees.
60,
two
yeah.
Two or three of those nights.
In La Crosse.
In La Crosse,
yeah.
63 degrees. That's, I mean, what's and what's the normal high temperature? That must be in the 50s, right? Or upper 40s again.
Upper 40s at best.
Yeah. So again, your minimum, your minimum temperatures at night are 20 degrees warmer than your normal temperatures, normal high temperatures.
Right. Pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. So let me give you my email.
Okay.
And you can ask for that. So it's Steve A, S-T-E-V-E-A, at ssec.wisc.edu.
ssec.wisc.edu.
Yep.
Okay.
And
is
I'll
it three S's or two?
Two S's for
two.
A Space Science Engineering Center.
Okay. Yeah, I thought Pete said three.
Three.
So.
Okay. And if you miss something, just email Larry or go on his Facebook, and Judith will send
okay,
it on.
Okay, I'm definitely interested because I think this is going to propagate bugs like we've not seen in this area before.
Yeah, I mean, we had dew points up around 60 degrees, which, again, is something we get in the summertime. It's just...
Well, the bugs are going to love it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, the good thing about the bugs loving it is that the peeps are out. You know, the frogs are out. You can hear the frogs beeping. And I always get worried that if they come too early, there won't be an insect supply for them to eat, but... There's insects.
There's
mosquitoes
insects
out there.
Yeah, I've already gotten bitten.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you very much for calling. Facebook question from Raleigh. Is it possible for Wisconsin to experience a solar eclipse? And there was a solar eclipse.
It definitely is possible. I don't know when the next one is. I've seen one totally solar eclipse. I'm thinking he means total, not partial. And the one that I saw was in South Dakota. So that's kind of like at our latitude. So
there was one pretty close, wasn't it, to a full part?
There was one in the U.S. and it was within driving distance of Madison. But I remember it was really, really cloudy. And so that's why I didn't go because I knew it wasn't going to happen.
No, it wasn't going to happen.
But if you have a chance, I certainly advocate three things that you must see. One is Northern Lights. The second is if you can see a total solar eclipse. To see that, because that's amazing. And then go see the Grand Canyon, because that kind of puts everything in perspective.
Buck in Madison, your turn. Hi, Buck. Thank you for calling.
Well, the fourth thing I'd recommend is gazing on the Himalayan mountains.
Oh, yes. I actually flew over the Himalayan mountains. You're right. As our plane approached them, it was during a weather experiment. I was taking a bunch of notes. And I kept writing, there's stratocumulus on the horizon. There's stratocumulus. And it was just like, no, that's snow-covered mountains.
All right, now to my initial statement, which I'll abridge, is the Republicans have screwed up our winter, right? And Judas said, don't say that. My point is that this is really weird, protracted, premature warmth. Our whole winter has been inadequate. We've had only four falls of snow that I recorded, and none of them have been a blizzard. And now we have a week of warmth that I am able to walk out in barefoot, and this is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is human-caused in addition to other cycles. And our people as a planet have screwed up, and our, in particular, our leaders for the last 12 years, actually going back to 1980, have done nothing to restrain the change in our climate. And we're going to suffer. Bread prices are going to go up because we don't have enough moisture. And apples are going to probably get hit by a freeze. All kinds of things are going to happen to us as a consequence of our being complacent about the changes we induce.
What do you think?
I mean, the Earth is clearly changing. I mean, the temperature is going up. And it's not just the temperatures, but sea level is rising as the oceans warm, glaciers are receding, sea ice amount is going down and thickness is going down. So all those things are consistent with a warmer environment. And it's clear that emissions from carbon dioxide are playing an important role in determining that warming. So it is very depressing when politicians get up and say that, trust me, It's not happening. This is natural because it's like you really shouldn't trust them on scientific things like that, apparently. But there is good news, and that is that while politicians are up and, you know, beating their chest and saying things that they probably shouldn't be saying, people are, and the government is, in some aspects, planning for this. So there was a report that just came out with regard to the Navy. And the Navy is, as it looks to its future, planning for increased sea level rises. So even through the mist of confusion that tends to get generated, particularly this time of year by politicians, you know, the people who are actually doing things and looking and planning for the future are actually trying to plan for the global changes that we're predicting. So that's the good news, I think.
That part is good.
Yeah, right. I mean, the fact that they have to plan for it because we're not doing anything, I mean, one could argue that's bad news, but I like to focus on the good news in that people are convinced now. The decision makers who are actually doing things realize that this is an issue that we have to plan for.
And to some extent, I'm seeing, you know, if you think of just businesses, and this is sort of totally off the topic in some ways, I'm seeing a bigger emphasis in on the part of business to cut their energy use, to cut their, you know, to be more green, because it simply makes economic sense.
Right. Yeah. Right. And we're at a stage now, technology, where you can do that and save money. So why not do it?
Yeah.
Not just for the environment.
Foolish
but
not
the cost.
To. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. But thank you for calling. I want to give John in Milwaukee a chance to join in. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, this is John in Milwaukee. I got a question about when the tsunamis occurred. They say that it actually shifted the axis of the Earth, you know, a degree or a half a degree or whatever. Two-part question. Number one, is that a permanent shift? And number two, when the axis of the Earth shifted, has that got anything to do with the way the climate is changing? Because of the way the sun hits it, or the way it, you know, situated in the solar system.
If it changed the axis of the Earth, it probably didn't change it by very much. Certainly not a half or a degree or a degree, because the normal wobble that we get is only on the order of 2 to 3 degrees. So to change it that much would take a huge amount of energy. And if it did change it, and I have to go check this out because a number of people have asked this question of me, whether on the radio or not. So I need to go check that answer. But I would think that in terms of if it did change it, is that when the water sloshes back, it would probably wobble back to its more normal state of affairs as the ocean levels itself out again.
So that's what I would think.
Does that occur, like, immediately, or is that something, you know, when something as big as the Earth is going to shift a bit, will it take a while, like a top spinning, to get back to its normal rotation? And, you know, in that period, would that affect our climate?
Yeah, I would envision it would go back to, like, a top, so not right away. It would kind of settle on back. Mm-hmm. But, again, the change is going to be too small to affect our weather, and then it would go back in time scales. I'm sure that would be not impacting climate over the next 10 years, for sure.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And our guest today, Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, with us as we talk weather and climate with him. Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears-Poisson joins us as well during this Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Oh, boy, our goal is to keep bringing you discussions with folks like our weather guys, and it's always a lot of fun, isn't it?
It's a lot of fun, and I learn so much listening to the weather guys, listening to the other great guests that we have. You know, we're able to do that, bring people like the weather guys to the airwaves in large part because of listener contributions. Your gift of any amount right now makes a big difference as we raise the money we need to make these discussions possible. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and help pay for the programs that you depend on. We're looking for how many more pledges? About 55?
55 more pledges.
55 more pledges.
In the next hour.
In the next hour. So that's about one a minute. We can do that. We can certainly do that. You can make it. Your contribution, you should make your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. 2552.
You know, I love working on this program because we cover topics like environmental and consumer issues, gardening, how-to topics, Wisconsin authors, Wisconsin food, such great information from this program. And it's possible because of your financial support of Wisconsin Public Radio. That's what makes the difference. So support this program and all the other programs you enjoy on WPR with your pledge. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And you might be wondering how much to give. Well, that's up to you, really, your contribution. Any amount will be turned into great programs, programs that will keep you informed and entertained all year long. So please make your pledge right now, any amount, at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
When you do, you play an essential part in funding the programs you count on and enjoy every day. When I pledge, I like to listen, and when there's an hour that I just love, I think, that's the hour that I just paid for. Make your pledge right now. Pay for an hour of great radio at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you don't have to live in a big city to have access to everything the world has to offer. You can get it right here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's really the Wisconsin idea in real life. You might live in a small town, but when you listen to WPR, you're in the global public square, hearing from artists, reporters, scientists, experts in the forefront of their fields. Because you appreciate this access to the best the world has to offer, make a pledge of support to WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And if you've never given before, let me tell you what to expect. It's a very short process. Takes a couple of minutes. You answer some basic questions, your name, address, how much you'd like to donate, and how you'd like to pay.
And that's it. Make that first donation to WPR. You'll feel great about it. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
54 more pledges to go in the next 55 minutes, 56 minutes. So that's what we've got. Help out right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
So here's a great way to do something great for others and for yourself. If you give $120 or more, you can request Food for 40 as your thank you gift, helping those in need in your area. Meals are provided through local food banks. It's a great way to give back to your community, besides giving back to your community in the form of great WPR programming. You'll also be entered in a drawing for a trip for two on a garden tour of London and Southeast England with Larry. I'm telling you, you cannot imagine how
much fun it's
going to be. As Larry pointed out, these are not flea bag hotels. These are like 5-star hotel spas. He was rubbing it in a little bit in the office. Not that I blame him. Gorgeous gardens. You know, we heard from Jessica Bell from My Wine School. Mm-hmm. She said there's some great wines in England. I'm sure that Larry will be
sampling just to make sure that she's not lying about it.
And then he'll be clearing his palate with some great British brews, too, I'm sure. And you can be along with him if you donate and get entered into that drawing. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Kathleen and James from Cottage Grove say, keep those weather guys cooking.
There you go. Steve's giving that a hearty nod of his head. We love to have the weather guys and all of the other great guests that we have on the show with Larry. I know you appreciate it, too. So donate now at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Could not be simpler. Do it now, and thank you.
Thank you very much. And we're talking with Steve Ackerman, and we're going to continue talking with him, and we're going to continue to answer the questions that you have for him when you call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@WPR.org or my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I haven't checked the Facebook page to see if we've gotten any photos yet, but we will do that. I had an email from Bill who says, well, I understand that pressure systems cause winds and temperature differences cause changes in the state of water, causing snow, hail, and rain, if not relative humidity. But how does electrical charge build up to the point that there's lightning?
Oh, that's a good question. and I think it gets at the point of how big storms are and how much energy they carry. Because here's what, if you think of lightning, a good way to think about it is that it's just a huge electrical spark like you get when you're crossing a rug and you touch a doorknob. It's basically the same thing, a big discharge of static electricity. And if you're going to generate static electricity, the most common way we do it is to take a balloon and rub it on a wool sweater.
Yeah.
And those two things charge up the two objects. One gets positively charged and one gets negatively charged. And so in a cloud, basically, since lightning is basically a discharge of static energy, electrical energy, you need to get exchanges of charges. And the way that we do that is to have ice particles within a cloud collide and exchange particles with ones that are wet, like either liquid water or their ice covered with melting water, for example. And when they rub up against each other, they exchange charges. And so you end up getting a separation in the cloud of usually negative charges near the top and positive charges near the bottom, because it distributes according to particle size. And then once you get that buildup, then eventually the lightning stroke is what tries to wipe out that charge distribution within the cloud.
You know, I mentioned that Michigan had something, I think they had six tornadoes in the month of March already, and still a couple days yet to go on that. And I know that there are citizen storm spotters out there who do quite a nice job helping the professionals. And we've got one online, I think. Steve Fitzsimmons, are you there?
Hi, Larry. Thank you for inviting me on your show. And hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
I love your program. It's a great outreach and helping to educate the community on the weather. There's so many questions, and the weather's always interesting, and it's always changing.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you're in Madison, Steve. And,
I am.
And how'd you get interested in the storm spotting?
I'm not sure how it happened. One year I attended a tornado spotter class at the Alliance Center. And that year was the year that we had the tornado on the west side of Madison. And those two events kind of made me into the super storm spotter that I became, where I joined a club, the Midwest Severe Storm Tracking and Response Center here in Madison. And that took me to where I could learn more about the weather and learn about severe weather, because there's so many factors involved with severe weather. It's like looking at when you're looking at the storm, you could see all kinds of clouds, but which ones are you going to pay attention to? Which ones are the ones that need to be reported to, like, the National Weather Service?
So you're a train spotter?
A train spotter, yes.
Yep.
So anybody can become a train spotter if they attend a two-hour class at the spotter training class given by the National Weather Service.
Mm-hmm. And then there's regular, I think, updates as well in terms of training. I think you're asked to go back at least once a year for...
Yes, it's recommended that everybody who's been trained go back every year to reinforce what they've learned. Because as Rusty Capella, the warning coordinator, meteorologist at the National Weather Service, reminds us, it's a college-level class that he teaches in 2 hours. And so that's a lot of information to absorb. So every time you go, you pick up a little bit more and you see a little bit more. Because while there are good training classes online at the National Weather Service, at our website at Midwest, and Skywarn has some nice classes. Skywarn's another spotter organization out of Milwaukee and some other counties throughout the state. But being there in person, listening to the person talk and give examples, you can't really beat that. You know, online is good, but being there in person, that really adds to the reinforcement of the learning.
Yeah, you can really exchange questions and discussions and ask some really good questions about the imagery that they show that helps you identify potential threats.
So maybe you could just tell us what you actually do when a severe storm is coming.
Well, about a couple days out, I check the Midwest Severe Storm Tracking site every day, and I check the Weather Service every day. And we know about 2-3 days out when severe weather can be expected in our area. We have different conditions. So if we have a condition green, I know it can happen within 24 hours. So that's the first thing I do. Then when severe weather actually is occurring, I may go outside and see what's going on, report what I see if I see a reportable event. There could be different things. One of the things we learn about in severe storm spotting is lightning hazards, flash flood hazards, and of course, what to look for when reporting high winds, straight line winds, funnel clouds, and tornadoes. There's so many things that you can look for in the sky that look like tornadoes. I mean, there's a lot of things you look at, and, you know, if you see a low-hanging cloud, Rusty likes to call that a scary-looking cloud. It is scary-looking. And you really have to have a trained eye on it. Is that cloud spinning? Is it rotating? Is it coming down to the ground? Is it touching the ground? And if there's debris on the ground, that's the definition of a tornado, a violent rotating column of air descending from the thunderstorm base to the ground. So when you see that, then you know you have a tornado, that debris. So now, a lot of times here in Wisconsin, we can't see that ground because we're obstructed by trees or tills and different things and get in the way. So we can't really say, you know, it's a tornado until we can actually see the debris cloud on the ground.
Or the tornado itself.
When it's filled.
Well, how does, Steve, how do the data that storm spotters gather, how do they get reported, maybe verified and so forth?
Well, you guys report right to the National Weather Service, right? If you're a trained spotter?
Different ways. One is 911, but 911 center is going to get a lot of false calls, you know, people who see those scary-looking clouds. So what the Weather Service does is help reduce that by training people what to look for. We have, at the Midwest Center, we have people who are dedicated to relaying information through ham radio to the National Weather Service. There's also eSpotter, which can be used to relay information to the National Weather Service. And if you go to a class, you'll also get a private line number to call relay your information to the meteorologist directly.
Yeah. So there, I mean, we have radars and things to penetrate storms and to look at potential threats, but there's nothing like having a trained observer on the ground looking for those signatures and then reporting them. Those are much more reliable.
Much more reliable than
our interpretation of radar data, because they're there and they know specifically what to look for that sometimes the radar data can't pick up.
Yeah, the radar can't really accurately identify a tornado as a tornado.
That's right. They generally pick up signatures of, you know, this looks like a tornado vortex signature. But having somebody on the ground to actually report, you know, the wall cloud or a funnel cloud. That's what gets the National Weather Service people really important information.
And where do people go to sign up to become spotters?
If you contact the local office, either in Green Bay or La Crosse or in Sullivan, they'll be able to tell you when the trainings will occur. And they must be I think they actually start in April is when they'll start going around to different places. I mean, as Steve mentioned, he did it at the Alliance Center. So they go around the state and do training for people all over the state.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate taking the time to talk with us today about what you do. It's really good work. And obviously, he's really enthused about it. It's important work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you. Pat in Madison, thank you for waiting. Hello.
I was just interested in hearing what the gentleman who was on previously was talking about, and it makes sense to me that, you know, our local weather, meteorologists on the news would talk about the sensational things that happen, but I've been struck, you know, periodically at how they just recap what the weather was when it's not a big sensational event, when they could spend that time, I would think, with more, you know, educational or valuable information, sort of like on the order of what we're talking about with climate change and so on, spend that time educating folks instead of just telling us what the weather was that day, when, you know, especially when it's not a big storm. And I've wondered if there's value in them recapping, you know, simply going over the highs and lows of the day and things like that, because they do spend quite a bit of that half hour or so on that.
That's a good question. And, you know, we know some of the local forecasters that are on television, and I'll have to ask them that. My guess is that, you know, you're right, even when it was a very, you know, what I'll call a non-exciting day, which usually means it's very nice weather, they still report the normal highs and lows. And I wonder if they don't do that in order to get the viewer to get engaged again in seeing something familiar before they get into what the future is going to look like. You know, so you kind of mentally know that, oh, yeah, okay, so now they're talking about the weather, and now they're talking about the normals, and now they're going to get to the future and maybe some of the more crazy weather.
So that was sort of a routine.
Yeah.
And if they're and they'll spend more time on that if they have less to talk about. They've got a set amount of time to talk.
That's right. Yeah, and they do this all without a script. I mean, we really need to give those folks credit because, you know, going in front of a television and saying you've got 5 minutes to talk, go for it. You know, whereas most of the other newscasters, they have a script in front of them that, that they're reading from. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Well, thank you, Pat, for calling. But you're going to look into that some more.
Yeah, yeah, I'll look into that. Right. I guess those guys. Why do they have that particular format?
So you may not hear it until the last Monday of next month.
Month, right?
But you will hear it.
But you will hear it.
Thanks, Pat. Mike in Eagle River, hello to you.
Good morning. My question is more mundane. What is the dew point, and how does it relate to the heat index and humidity? And I'll listen off the air.
All right.
Oh, good question. It is very much related to both the heat index and the humidity. But in order to get to the relative humidity and the heat index, you also need to know what the temperature is. So what the dew point temperature is that dew is just when water condenses from the atmosphere in its vapor phase onto some object. You know, I think we're all very familiar with dew on the grass, for example. So the dew point temperature is the temperature at which that will occur. And so you have to cool the air down to that temperature in order to get dew to form on the grass or on cars or whatever. So now how's that related to humidity indexes or heat indexes? And so if you have a high temperature and a high dew point, so dew points in the 80s or so, then that gives us a high heat index and often a warning in terms of a health warning. Because if the heat indexes get too high because the dew point is too high, then our bodies can't cool down by sweating and then evaporating that sweat. And then, of course, the dew point and the temperature together give us information about the relative humidity. So the closer the dew point is to the temperature, then the higher the relative humidity. And because of this relationship, you'll often hear, again, going back to the evening news, they won't just report one or two of these things. They do all three.
Yep.
Dew point, temperature, and relative humidity.
Jim in Fort Atkinson, hi.
Hi, Larry. I think your show is one of the most informative on daytime WPR, and I think it should be repeated tonight, a little less of the BBC.
Thank you.
A little more repeats. I'd like to ask Mr. Ackerman, and I'll get off the air for my answer, why we hear about ultraviolet warnings for places like Australia and New Zealand. What is the condition of the ozone layer in this hemisphere?
Hmm. Oh, that's a good question. So in this hemisphere, I'm going to assume you mean the south hemisphere? The southern hemisphere or our hemisphere?
For our hemisphere.
For our hemisphere, okay. Our hemisphere, the ozone varies seasonally. We don't get the ozone hole like they get down in Antarctica, down in Australia. Although UV radiation is as dangerous to anybody no matter where you are, because too much ultraviolet radiation can give you sunburn, or it can lead to skin cancer as well.
Well, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Steve Ackerman, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with our guest Steve Ackerman, and Judith Sears-Poisson joins us, and of course she's joining us because this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive, and more than ever, you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio and the Ideas Network for intelligent discussions, and more than ever, we rely on the money you give to keep that talk on the air. So your gift today, $60, $120, any amount, helps fund the important discussions that you count on. So please give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. How many pledges are we looking at here?
Larry, we're still looking to get 50 pledges in now the next 40 minutes. So your pledge right now helps keep this program going strong. Make your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, I like to think about the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as sort of a statewide town hall where people can come together, hear about topics and issues that they care about, ask questions, share information. It's a great concept.
And I know people feel like when they're listening to the show, they're listening to Larry and a friend hanging out, having a cup of coffee, maybe a beer. And, you know, because we know you benefit from this community, whatever kind of community you're picturing, we're asking you to help pay for it. Your support is a very important piece of what makes the Ideas Network possible. Be a part of this great tradition with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And rather than receiving a book or a CD as a thank you gift, you can do something extra special. It's something really cool. Give $120 or more and select food for 40 as your thank you gift. We'll pass on what we would normally spend on a book or a CD to a Wisconsin food bank in your area. So pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I listen to all kinds of topics. Every topic you can think of, I'm very interested in. It could be history, could be writing, could be health, could be politics, art, creativity. I'm interested in everything. And what I really love is the call-ins, questions, and comments, because you really do feel like you're part of a community of learners. I just think it's great. You feel like you're really going to school when you're driving in your car. You can be multitasking. You can be doing the dishes, folding laundry, and still be part of a community of people who really value knowledge. I'm Diane Ryan from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for connecting with the greater Wisconsin community.
Thank you so much, Diane. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson, here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've said it before, listener support is such a big part of why this program is available to you right now. So make your donation in support of this program and all the programs you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We just heard Diane from Eau Claire say she's interested in everything, and I think that is the perfect way to describe Larry. Larry is interested in everything. He loves learning about things, and he knows so much. You know, giving just takes...
I'm pretty good at a cocktail party. I know a little bit about a whole bunch of topics.
And then when it gets too deep, you move on to the next one. Well, giving takes just 2 minutes of your time. Tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay for it. Consider using your credit card. It saves time, postage, and paper, and puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, just take those 2 minutes right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might not have a life coach or a personal trainer or a weather expert, right? Steve probably doesn't stop by your home very often. But here he is with us right now. And with Wisconsin Public Radio, you get great advice, all kinds of experts all the time. And what's the cost to you? Well, you choose. The Idea Network is your affordable source for helpful information. It's a great deal. Please give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
A great example is the tax experts that we had on 4 different tax shows leading up to tax day. People called in with their questions, you know, their concerns about their taxes. That's a great service. And so we are looking for 50 more pledges in the next 35 minutes or so. Thank you if you've already given. If not, the time is now. Help us stay on track by making your contribution right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might ask, well, why should I be giving right at this moment? Well, you should be giving right at this moment because you're listening right now. That's a big part of it. And you're thinking about it right now. So please do it now.
And it's the right thing to do, and you'll feel great when you do it. WPR is an important public service, and you'll be making a wise investment in quality music, entertainment, news, and talk.
And I think we use your donation very wisely. We put it into the programs that you hear every day. So please support the station that you value right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Take a second. Think about the programs that you love on Wisconsin Public Radio. How often do you listen? For how long? Think about your budget now. What amount will make you feel good after you've pledged? Think of that amount and then pledge online at WPR.org or give us a call, 888-202-2552.
Pledging to WPR, it's quick and easy, and to make it even easier, make the switch to becoming a sustainer. A sustaining membership is one that automatically renews every year, and you can just choose a monthly gift amount. Maybe it's $5 a month or $10 a month. Any amount can be a sustaining gift.
And as a sustainer, you'll help Wisconsin Public Radio save money because we won't have to send as many renewal notices in the mail. So make the switch and make a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What does making a pledge mean? Well, a pledge is a promise, and we're promising or pledging to bring you great shows every day. You pledge to support them with a contribution in any amount.
When you help pay the cost of this station, we'll make sure there's something interesting for you to listen to. Larry and I make that pledge to you. So now make yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Give $120 or more and you can request food for 40 as your thank you gift, providing meals to those who are in need in your area. Last year, our WPR listeners gave more than 71,000 meals, and I think that's absolutely amazing. So let's try to do that again.
And we still need 50 more pledges in the next 30 minutes. Please help us out now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
There are lots of people giving today. I hope you'll give right now. Adrian in Grafton says, the trip to London looks magnificent, and what a great offering for Garden Talk listeners.
Yes.
Call right now at 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org and make your contribution right now. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Talking weather now with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Steve's director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. John Martin just joining us now, director of the Cooperative Institute. I'm sorry, professor and chair of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. John, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, Larry.
And what were you telling your students today in class?
We're talking about cloud formation and precipitation formation within them. Beginning to answer the obvious question, although maybe it's not obvious till you bring it up, that not every cloud precipitates.
That's right. In fact,
and yet they're all made of water or ice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
In fact, I would say most don't precipitate.
Yeah, that's probably correct,
that's right.
Isn't it?
Only
yeah.
a few do.
Yeah, they're rare exceptions.
Well, Don in Boaz has a question about those that do, I think. Don, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks, Larry. Listening to the last two callers, it was so interesting, I almost forgot my own topic. So I'm glad I wrote it down. Electrical storms. Now, I would like to know a little bit more about the electrical polarity there. I understand that the negatively charged electrons are attracted by the positively charged protons. Am I on the right track here to understand lightning?
So what happens in a storm, because we have such, particularly the storms that precipitate and thunderstorms, which all have lightning, have very strong vertical motions upwards, and they're very turbulent. If you ever flown through one, you get bounced around in that plane. And so what happens is particles within those clouds rub up against each other, and they exchange charges. And so it's the particles that become positively charged or negatively charged because they have too many or too little electrons. And then it seems like there's a tendency to get the small particles negatively charged. So they travel, or let me see the other way around. No, the small particles get positively charged, and they get carried to the top of the storm because they're smaller.
So
you have negative charges. The bigger particles tend to get towards the base of the cloud. And that causes the ground to become negatively charged because opposites attracts and the same charge repels.
Mm.
And so as that charges build up at the base of the cloud and charges build up at the ground, then eventually the lightning bolt that goes from the cloud to the ground exchanges those charges and tries to make everything mutual
again. Reestablishes the proper balance.
Right.
Look at it that way. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. That explains it.
All right. Thanks, Don. Sue in Northern Oconto County, on to you now. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I'm a weather spotter, and I'm also a precipitation recorder for the National Weather Service, and also Cocoa Rise, if you're familiar with Cocoa Rise.
Oh, yeah, Cocoa Rise. Mm. A good friend of mine runs that.
Yeah, well, great, because I think it's a really cool thing that we're doing, trying to record precipitation all over the country. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they're hoping the world, I think. But what I called to tell you about is that the Storm Spotter training schedules are put up online on the National Weather Service. So all you have to do is go to the NOAA sites for Green Bay, Sullivan, and I think La Crosse is the other one?
Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
And you can look them up right on there. They tell you where they are, what time they are. And then you can contact them right through that website.
Great.
That is great.
Yeah, that's really good information.
We were talking earlier with Steve Weatherspotter, weather storm tracker.
Right, yeah. About how, he was an official trained storm tracker.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were wondering about how you get that training.
Yeah.
So
that's one way you do it.
Thank you, Sue.
Yeah, that's one way, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate the call.
So do you have a hail impactor in your backyard, too?
No, I haven't had really a lot of concern with that so far. I've been lucky. I'll have to throw one together in a hurry if I need one. Mostly, I have a cylinder that's inside of a cylinder, and one records about 1 inch of precipitation. There's a funnel for that one, and then anything that runs over runs into a larger cylinder. I also do snow core as well.
Oh, nice.
And if you're familiar with snow core, you take that same big cylinder, it's about a 4-inch cylinder, and you turn that upside down and you ram it all the way to the ground through the snow, and then you melt that, and that gives you the total amount of precipitation or liquid precipitation that's on the ground.
But you don't report snow depth, is that right, Sue?
Oh yeah, I do snow depth
and snow accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do a snow accumulation? I'm kind of curious. I have a feeling that it's kind of non-standard. I'd like to know.
Well, probably.
I mean, from one place to the next. No, my guess is you do it right, and I bet you there's others who don't, and I'm serious about that. So I'd like to know what you say, how you do it.
I got two different snowboards that I use. Mm-hmm. One is up on two blocks of wood. That one there records the snow that I get on a regular basis. So every day that I have snow, I have to go out and measure that board.
Yeah, and you do it once a day, right?
Right.
That's the right way to do it.
Snow, I do it once a day. Otherwise, I don't worry about it.
Yeah,
much,
sure.
And then I have another flat snowboard that lays right on the ground, and that one is the total accumulation of snow.
Okay.
And so that one has a green backing to it that's supposed to give you the measurements. However, the green backing heats up in the sun, and it gets this great big puddle of open air around it. So I generally go out with my snow stick and measure it.
Yeah, I've
got two of those now. I've got one that's pretty stout and heavy duty, so I can drive it right to the ground wherever I do snow core.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got another one that almost looks like a U, but it's been driven to the ground so many times now. It's
yeah.
So
Thank you, Sue.
That's what I do.
That's great. I like that report. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Tim in Freeport, Illinois, hello to you.
Hi. Hey, I apologize for trying to do pictures on the radio, but...
No, it's all right.
John and Steve, I sent you guys email pictures.
Oh, right, yep. The crepuscular rays.
I don't think I saw that.
And I was going to send it to you, Larry, but I was technologically challenged enough. Two is all I can handle. So. But you know how clouds, when the sun is setting, you'll see the rays of sunlight coming off from behind it. Everybody's seen that.
Yep.
Well, we were in Puerto Rico coming home from the beach. It was 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon. And to the southeast, there's a big cloud and these rays emanating from behind it, just like the sun were behind it. And I looked the other way to make sure I wasn't hallucinating. Then the other picture that I sent was looking back towards the sunset so you could see the time of day and all. Any ideas what would be putting off intense enough light to give the rays like that?
It's still the same thing with regard to the sun and the cloud actually shading the sun. So the intense rays that you see are, if the cloud weren't there, that would be the normal color of the sky. Mm. And it's the darker bands where the clouds are actually shading. And so you don't see that sunlight getting there.
Isn't there something, too, though, called, Tim? Maybe this is part of your question. I think one time in my life, it was here in Madison, I saw something that somebody ended up telling me later on was called an anti-crepuscular ray. That's coming from the other direction, isn't it, or something?
Right. Yeah. Well, because this was in the east, and the sun was in the west. And
yeah,
so that
I saw this in July, so it would be consistent with the, towering cumulus that you probably had down in Puerto Rico. Yeah. Is that right, Steve?
Yes, you can. And now, actually, I'm trying to get online real quick and find Tim's email again to bring that picture up. Because when I first looked at it, I got drawn right to the crepuscular rays.
Because I assumed it was a large, bright cumulus cloud behind that the sun was reflecting off of, and it was just such an intense reflection that was causing the rays, but...
That might be right. I just can't recall what the explanation was on the particular day that I was asking around after it had happened. Somebody said, oh, yeah, that's known as an anti-crepuscular ray. And I wonder if you can find that on Google or something. And you might be able to put together all of the circumstances from your own case and say, oh, yeah, that's got to be it. And you might be already on it, Tim. That might be what it is.
Okay. All right. And Larry, Steve does make home visits. I've got his textbook at home. And
that's right.
If I have a question, I can check that out. That's great.
That's wonderful, Tim. Thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate you. That's one way to make a home visit. You right. Get your book out there. Yeah. Right, golly.
Absolutely.
What's your book title?
An Introduction to Weather and Climate. I think that's all. I think that's that.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's right.
Can't remember your own book title.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Bob and Eau Claire, hello to you. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Great.
Good.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
This is a special treat to have an hour and a half long program. I wish you did this every month. We live in Eau Claire, and we've talked about this phenomenon in the past where Eau Claire seems to have some sort of an anti-rain component here. We watch storms coming from the west breaking up just before they get here, and we get the dregs rather than getting whatever was hitting, say, at the big hill west of Menominee. Now, here's a new one. Steve referred to that upper level anti-cyclone that was producing all of that weather about a week or so ago. There was a wall of clouds heading straight north, and it was coming right at Eau Claire. And I thought for sure we would get a minimum of a half an inch of rain out of that thing. We got less than 0.05 out of the whole event. What is going on?
Mm-hmm. Well, such a thing can happen rather commonly, as it turns out. I think that its coincidence with this unusual warmth probably makes it seem even more unusual than it actually is. I think that there are times where you can have clouds that are developing in the middle to upper part of the troposphere under conditions that might normally occur even closer to the ground and develop deep cumulus clouds. And the reason why they're kind of relegated to the middle and upper part of the troposphere is because the air near the ground is not close enough to saturation. And so you can end up just ingesting air that's a little bit too dry for those clouds to really maintain their punch or strengthen their punch. And they might drop rain out of their bottoms, but it doesn't all reach the ground. So I think that might be the kind of thing you're talking about. I can't tell you I know exactly what the circumstances were on that day and why it happened that way that day, but I can say it's not particularly an uncommon thing, even in the sort of warm, humid times of the year. And last week really mimicked that. Yeah. Weather-wise.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for calling, Bob. I appreciate your call. Caller wondered if, and others have wondered, if you could address specifically whether we should expect a very hot summer because of the mild winter and warm spring.
Yeah, the National Weather Service office in Milwaukee put together a really nice set of statistics that we took advantage of in our weekly column a couple of weeks ago. They looked back at the last 141 winters in Milwaukee and ranked them coldest to warmest, warmest being number one, coldest being 141. And they found that if they looked at the top 20 warmest winters of all time, and Milwaukee's recent winter was, I think, the fourth warmest of all time, maybe even third at this point, and we were fourth or third here in Madison. But all you have to do is get in the top 20 and then look at the subsequent spring and subsequent summer of those winters. And 60% of the time, the spring was warmer than normal. If you were in the top 20 all-time warmest winters, 69% of the time, the summer was warmer than normal.
Ah.
So I'd say the odds are in favor of we're leaning towards a warmer-than-average spring and a warmer-than-average summer, but that's not physical. It's only statistical. So it's hard to say with certainty. But if I had money to put on it, which I do not. I might go with those odds. They're pretty good.
They're pretty good. Yeah. 70% odds.
Yeah, right. 7 and 10. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Well, my wife. I'd even take my that. Wife thanks you. She will. She likes it warmer. I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I'm with you, Larry. I'm not so sure either.
I would much rather have it. I think I'd much rather have it just a little, like normal. Normal's fine.
Normal's fine, right. Yeah,
normal's
fine. And
not fine.
Too humid. That's what I don't
and
like.
If I'm going to go, and low humidity, but rain at night when we're asleep.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. Nice gentle rains while we're asleep.
Maybe lightning when we can see it.
Yeah.
In the distance.
That streak in mid-July last year where we had several days over 90 was actually more like a normal southern Wisconsin summer. We haven't had many of those 90-degree days over the last 5 or 10 years in comparison with prior years. So I don't really know what normal means anymore.
Wow, that's,
you know, we might all be adjusted to 4 days over 90 every summer, and that's not normal. 13 is more normal.
Yeah.
So
we're normal, I think.
Yeah. I know you are, Larry.
Two of us are normal.
Oh, man. Thanks, guys. It's so much fun. Steve Ackerman, a director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison. John Martin, professor and chair of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. Our guests, as they are the last Monday of every month, Judith Sears-Poisson, joining us now. You are listening, of course, to Wisconsin Public Radio, and we rely on you to pay for all the programs that you enjoy here on the Ideas Network. And during this spring membership drive, we're asking you to take action by becoming a contributor to WPR. Every gift helps support the programs you rely on. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And we've got a kind of a cool deal.
We do. You know, it would have been great to have a big bang of donations early in the show, but it's okay if you've waited because right now we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $1,025 in effect right now just for these last 10 minutes offered by an anonymous donor who enjoys Larry's show. We know you enjoy Larry's show, too. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200. You get it. Take advantage of this very generous match to make your gift go even further in paying for programs like this one. Get your pledge match dollar for dollar right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Been talking to the weather guys, and I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm sure you have. Now, please take a few minutes to make this hour and many hours to come possible. Put a value on the programs you enjoy every day, then make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, there are a few things that you can do, one thing, and have so many good things happen as a result. One is this great challenge grant that we have that will double your pledge right now in these last 10 minutes. You can also make a $120 donation to Wisconsin Public Radio, that's $10 a month, and choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. Your thank you gift will be in the form of 40 meals for those facing hunger through a Wisconsin food bank right in your area. Pledge any amount right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And for $120, you can select Food for 40 as your thank you gift, like I did.
It's a wonderful thing. Food for 40, I'm a big fan. So you signed up for that.
I did.
And it would help if I turned the microphone on. There,
I did. Or I could just project over to yours. I did it during the last break when I was multitasking, answering phones, doing Facebook, and pledging for Food for 40.
Did you do it online?
I did at WPR.org.
Or you could have called 888-202-2552.
That might have been a little too much multitasking.
Probably, because you're already you'd have had to use a second phone.
But, you know, pledges have been coming in for $5 up through thousands of dollars. Maybe you're considering a pledge of $100 a month.
Well, I tell you what, that turns into a $1,200 contribution, and that's going to play a major role in supporting this station, make it available to everyone who wants to listen. Your pledge, any amount now, is appreciated, and we'll help you set it up at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, I'm not telling you anything you haven't noticed, but Larry knows so much about so many topics. Food, gardening, nature, history, you name it. And, you know, Larry knows Wisconsin like almost no one else. You know, I tell him that if there's an intersection in a tavern, he's probably driven through and had a beer. Larry just knows the state like no one else. And his enthusiasm and his real passion for Wisconsin comes through in every show. And I think that's why so many people listen and really enjoy it. This program is worth your support. Show your support now with a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $1,025 in effect right now. It's a great time to pledge because for every dollar you give, an anonymous donor who enjoys the show is going to donate an additional dollar. Their way of encouraging you to support the program. So double the impact of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And I want to make sure people realize that these challenge grants really are a challenge. If we don't make the match, we don't get the money. So please don't let us leave this money on the table. That's going to kill us. So please pledge now. Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. I have to say, you know, I learn a lot from listening to Larry and the Weather Guys. I also laugh a lot listening to them having such a good time talking about the weather. You get value from this program, but also from programs like Chapter a Day, Talk of the Nation, Zorba Pastor on Your Health, and many others you've come to rely on.
WPR gives you a window on the world, I think, is like no other, as a matter of fact. So I hope you'll support this exciting mix of programs you enjoy on this station with your contribution. Just go to WPR.org to make it or phone 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, everyone who pledges this drive will be entered in a drawing for a trip for two on a garden tour of London and Southeast England with Larry. The tour would be great. Going with Larry, priceless. You could be the lucky winner when you make a pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I see Steve and John are reaching for their billfolds right now. Where can we sign up? Oh, you don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard. Oh, maybe they were just reaching for a postcard. With your name, you could just go to a postcard, name, address, telephone number to WPR England Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison 53706. You can enter by you can enter by sending a postcard or making a pledge right now. That's the quick way to do it. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
So I have to mention again, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $1,025 in effect right now, just in these last few minutes of the program, offered by an anonymous donor who enjoys Larry's show. Your gift of $50 turns into $100. $100 turns into $200. You get it. Take advantage of this match, please, and make your gift right now. Make your gift go further in paying for the programs like this one that you enjoy. Get your pledge matched dollar-for-dollar right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On WPR, you get programs that inform and inspire you, we hope, and we know it, actually. Programs that entertain and engage you. You get these programs at the touch of a button or maybe the click of a mouse anytime you want it.
It's true. And what makes it all possible? You do. People like you who contribute to make it happen for themselves and for others.
Now's the time to do it. If it's been a while since you've donated, this is a perfect time to rejoin at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We'll be glad to have you back.
And we need 28 more pledges in the next 2 or 3 minutes to meet our goal. Help out now at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Do something great for others and for yourself. Give $120 or more, and you can support Food for 40 as your thank you gift, helping those in need in your area. You'll also be entered in the drawing for the trip for two on the garden tour of London. I promise I will buy at least one round of English beer or
now
wine.
Now they're reaching for their billfolds. Yeah. You know, Amy from Fond du Lac says, Larry Mueller is such a great part of my day. He always has such a great attitude. Amy, I could not agree more. Give now. Join Amy in supporting this program, all the programs you love, 888-202-2552, WPR.org.
Almost out of time. Donate right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thanks for listening and thanks for pledging.